Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day.
Sports Radio 550.
Heard that Buccaneers update there. The Bucs, as you like to call them, the Bucs, just to make it easier, are on the Bills' schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Not a game we've talked about a lot, Tampa Bay at Buffalo.
It kind of gets lost in the wash there.
That would be a game, I think, that if we were somewhere else, we would say those teams have never played.
Those two teams have barely played.
It isn't that often.
It feels like there was a weird glitch in the when it got redone that they got skipped or something, so it was a while there. But yeah, I think that's right. It's also a game to me that I don't want to say regardless of what kind of year Tampa is having by the time they face the Bills. What week is that again?
11?
Week 11. Okay. Because you know, if they're like 9-2 or 9-1 or something, or 8-2, yeah, people will be respecting them, I think. But it's a team I think it's easy to forget could be dangerous on their schedule.
Yeah.
You know, it's a game against a team that has been to the playoffs the last couple of years and have not, since Brady left, been, to me, a real Super Bowl contender-level team. But they're good. And it's a game that's easy to kind of overlook as, you know, it's not on a par with Philadelphia, even though they're from the NFC and, of course, the AFC big games. But it might be the next hardest game after the big ones.
Also a home game.
Right.
Just like the other big ones, right?
Right.
The Bills are 5-8 all time against Tampa. So, liar, if you're somebody who says they've never played, they've actually played 13 times. They meet in the preseason, too.
Oh, boy. Well, that'll tell us a lot.
Yeah, that's right. There won't be one player in that game that's going to play in the game in week 11. I like that that game. You know, it's one of the two. It's one of only two 1 o'clock Sunday home games for sure. The game in Week 18 with the Jets could end up being the same thing. But it's only the games against New Orleans and Tampa that are at 1 o'clock on Sunday. 5-8 all time. Does that surprise you that the Bills have a losing record in history against the Buccaneers?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Don't say O.J. Howard. What's the quintessential... What's the Bills-Bucks game or moment?
10-5, 1988.
10-5, yeah. One of the great scores.
Which is why I think it's weird. Like, I would describe the fan base as relatively going to overlook Tampa, but if you're old enough to go back to then, you probably maybe you're not, that game alone might count for like 3 losses in your brain, and you're not surprised that the Bills are 5-8 against Tampa all time because
right,
that game stung so badly that 10-5 we're good. What are we doing? What is happening here? And it's like the Jacksonville game from Urban
yes.
Meyer. Like it's a very similar
yes,
kind of
game.
Like we're great. I don't remember how good Tampa was in 1988.
They were 3-10.
Okay, so not good at all.
Not good at all.
And 10-5. What? What? And so it sort of sticks in there a little bit. So I think even though I didn't get to play the game, I don't know, 13 games. I might have guessed 6-7.
You would have been really close.
Yeah, right.
It's exactly how I feel. Close your eyes. Bills and Bucks. It's that game. They also lost to them in 86. They didn't. The weird thing was the Bucks never came here until, was it even that game with O.J. Howard? Like that might have been the first time they ever played here. But in the 80s, when you had in each conference two divisions of five teams and one of four, the last place teams in the divisions with five teams would play the same on the other side. So the Bills and Bucks played a couple of those times because they had both finished last. Like they were not unfamiliar with each other so much. And then you would play the AFC, the other fifth place team in the AFC twice, like they were in your division. So the Bills in Kansas City a couple times, or at least once, played twice in those years. How many games ever have ended 10-5?
Well, your question, I think, tells us that it's not a score.
It's one.
It's the only one.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the only 10-5 game in NFL history.
That's awesome. Not really, but whatever.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I looked up yesterday, we had a controversy late in the show yesterday, and I know if you were there.
Wow.
If you were there, I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about, and you're wondering how it was settled.
I can't wait to find out what it was.
I was going through the Chiefs schedule, and when it came, I got on a roll thinking that they would have a bad season, which wouldn't you like for me one time to be right? Wouldn't you like for me this time? Isn't this the first time you could actually hope? I hope Mike is right here.
That would be a eventful turn. That would be good for – that would be good.
And I'm going through all their games and building steam in an argument that they're actually going to lose. It was ended up being seven games, but that was with a late-season winning streak.
Right, they surged at the end, yeah.
And so I'm going through the games. At the Chargers, all right, that's in Brazil. You said, like, has there ever been a game in Brazil that wasn't wild and wacky? Then they have the Eagles. At the Giants, all right, still on the road at night. Now I'm already – I'm doing it again. I'm forcing it a little bit.
Yeah,
on the road at night means the Giants will beat the Chiefs because that's when they thrive. At home at night is when the Giants – we've all seen them just dominate in the last decade at home when they're in prime time.
The Chiefs tried to get that game changed on their schedule. They were unsuccessful.
They were nervous. They're nervous about it.
Yeah.
The Ravens in week four, and then they go to Jacksonville in week five. That's also a night game because, of course, it's Kansas City. So Jacksonville and the Giants get dragged into prime time because they're playing Kansas City. And I said, well, those teams have had some bangers. Those teams have had some – the Chiefs have had problems.
With Jacksonville?
In Jacksonville. I didn't know if I was right. It just felt right.
Yeah.
It wasn't right.
Yeah.
They have won.
Great.
They have beaten Jacksonville eight times in a row.
They're not 5-8 against Jacksonville.
No. Well, no. They're 10-6 against Jacksonville, but they've won the last eight, including the playoffs. I just think there was a game a couple of years ago early in the season that I was watching. Maybe the Bills were playing late or something. And I just remember Kansas City – imagine this, because we didn't see this every week last year. Kansas City struggling to score. They won the game 17-9. There was a playoff game the year before. Remember that with Jacksonville? Like Jacksonville almost had them.
I believe you. I can't see it in my head. I should.
27-20. Is this the game where Mahomes gets hurt and his backup makes the play? We've had this.
Oh, okay.
But the Bills lose to the Bengals the next day.
Right.
So it's the Bengals and the Chiefs in the AFC Championship. But that was a little. That was a bit of a struggle. But they did win. So it was erroneous for me yesterday to say anything about anything of the sort.
That's a house City. Of horrors for them,
exactly.
Or something. Right, yeah. No.
Who is a house of horrors for is us.
Jacksonville, yeah. Yeah.
They both are. Kansas City and Jacksonville both are houses of horrors for the Bills. No? Is that too strong?
I think that they've won there in the regular season sort of takes it. I know the playoff games are more important, obviously, but I think if, you know, it's not the 70s Sabres in the spectrum here that I'm dealing with.
Well, what's the closest thing then to the Bills having a house of horrors?
I like Jacksonville better, but I mean, how meaningful have any of the games been? I mean, one was a playoff game, so, you know, you've got that.
What are the Bills going to be against Jacksonville all time?
Oh, boy. What are we talking about? 20 games, maybe?
18. Okay. 20! including the playoffs. It's 20.
Okay.
Good guess.
Well, they've lost both the playoff games.
That's right.
Are we about to find out Jacksonville is our problem? Like we have a Jacksonville problem. We never really
first
knew
they were
it.
Yesterday they were Kansas City's problem.
Right, now they're ours.
Now they're our problem.
What the hell is going on in there?
10-10.
10-10. All right. And that even includes, like, you know, a loss here in this that Urban Meyer game is right in this, you know, the Bills are great era.
That's the worst game of the Allen years, isn't it?
If you exclude, like, the Cincinnati playoff game, yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, one was the highest stakes, and one was right. Almost no stakes.
Right.
So you have to incorporate that.
Yeah.
But is it his worst game? Remember, I didn't watch it. I've never seen the Jacksonville or the 9-6 game.
Yeah.
I was in Hawaii. It was my 50th birthday that day.
Lucky you.
And I was watching the Dolphins because Tua is from Hawaii, and they put the Dolphins on local TV. I think they were playing Houston. But I didn't see the Bills game. And the Dolphin game was either a blowout or over. And they put the Bills on. My father-in-law was excited because they put the Bills game on for like the last 2 minutes. Driving, they didn't get very far. They got to midfield or something.
Right.
Driving down 9-6. And so we got to watch the end of the Bills game, and then they lost. And normally, of course, that for me is, you know, the light goes on and it's post game time. But instead, in this case, it was like 10 in the morning.
And
we went out.
And you were in Hawaii.
We went to the beach.
Yeah, right.
That was
yeah.
It.
It's pretty good.
Let's go.
Fine. It's easy to put the game behind you. I don't remember this. I mean, I know the score. I know the futility. I remember them. I remember that drive, getting the ball back, thinking like, okay, you know, this. I knew you were off. Obviously, you're in Hawaii. I'm going to be doing post game. How am I going to frame this? You know, good teams get away with these, whatever. Like, just go make your drive and get out of here with, you know, terrible performance across the board, but you escaped. And instead, they stalled and they lost, and it was just.
How did they lose?
They could not stay on the field. They could not convert third downs.
They couldn't move the ball.
No, it was crazy.
Allen threw two picks, so was sacked four times, saying, like, fumbled.
Terrible. Yeah, Josh Allen, I think, got him on a strip.
Okay.
If I have that in my head anyway.
Mm-hmm. To end it.
So I don't know if it was to end it.
Maybe,
but. Either way, I think that happened. And
by the way, if you're just tuning in, yes, we are reliving the 9-6 Jacksonville Bills game
fun.
From
2021. It's good times. But
it is
I don't
fun.
Know, is it worth the Houston game last year was rank from Allen. I mean, not what 9-for-23 or whatever, or was it worse than that? It was really bad.
Maybe.
So I don't know, that might outrank it, even though they scored more points and Houston's a better team. You know, at the time than Jacksonville was when this game happened.
This is the thing about the Allen Bills, is both those games were very winnable. Remember the Houston game last year was theirs, right? I mean, it was theirs. And they got tied, got the ball. Okay, this is the scenario yesterday we were talking about where still, you know, you still have the ball. The Ravens, had Mark Andrews not dropped the two-point play, the Bills get the ball with a minute and a half, and, like, wouldn't you bet on them?
Mm-hmm.
That was that game, Houston. But they couldn't get the first down, and then Houston kicked a 60-yard field goal to win it.
And they didn't run any clock either because they threw it, and that was really hotly contested. Like, that they, you know, what are you doing? You should have, you know, turtled there. And I, like, you know, I'm over here going, you can't yell at them when they're not aggressive and then yell at them when
that's
they
right.
are, and circumstances, I mean, whatever. There's always circumstances. It's, you know, when they don't go for it in that situation, you get mad. And then if they do and it doesn't work, you get mad and whatever. But he was 9-for-30 in that game, as it turns out.
My.
I'm looking at the stats, Allen. I don't have, hang on.
What's worse?
There were no picks. One TD. I don't know.
Coleman.
Yeah, right.
What's worse, 9-for-30 or losing 10-5? Those are great numbers. Yeah, but again, regular season, they lost the week before.
Right. So it was a slide, early season slide.
Yeah. It's the thing about that. Did I say it? Like, these losses, there have been so few. They win constantly, but the losses are usually winnable games. Like, they're usually just, like, right there. That's the close games argument. I missed that argument. I missed that debate from a couple of years ago. The Bills went and kind of went down the middle on close games or won them last year, so we don't have that to chew on anymore. I missed that. The one year, right, all their close games were losses or most of them, and talked about whether or not that was a flaw. It's just that one Colt game, isn't it? The Jonathan Taylor...
Still, I mean, they got smacked around in the end in Baltimore last year pretty hard.
Okay, that's right. That's right.
That was not a...
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The game
31-10?
I think. I don't have it open now, but... you know, it felt maybe competitive when they were down 17 with the ball, and then that's when that crazy, like, that I don't know, was it an option? Whatever it was, Allen was rolled out to his left, and he just went to throw it across his body and got absolutely rocked. And like, oh, yeah, this isn't really a game. No.
It's over now.
Yeah. So like that one in that Colt game, I think, are the two. The others, I mean, yeah, you got that Minnesota game I was just thinking about the other day, and the home game against Minnesota, the fumble in the own end zone, and just all this 4th and 18 to Jefferson. It's like, how did you lose that game? You know, and you know it's on the way to a great season, so it might be easy to get the lost in there, but it's like, doesn't even add up when you look at the game. Like they lost this game.
35-10 last year was the Ravens score.
Ravens, yeah.
You know, speaking of whatever this is, the Eagles on the schedule this year, week 17, I'll just say again, I think that's unfortunate. I mean, the Bills have several marquee games. A couple are in prime time. Philadelphia at Buffalo certainly could have been. Week 17, I mean, if I'm sort of overinflating my sense of the Bills, you can call me on it, but I think it's a little bit too late for that game. It could be amazing. It could be two teams. It could be everybody's idea of a Super Bowl preview.
Mm-hmm.
But it also could be one team is clinched, one team got hurt. It's just maybe not.
Right.
The Chiefs and the Eagles play in week two, and that's awesome. The Bills and the Ravens playing in week one is great. You know, like just those right away, nobody's thinking about whether the game's going to be important or not. Like it's just, the season,
of course
here it is.
It is, right.
It's of course it is. But that Philadelphia game might not be what it could be in week 17. I mean, post-Christmas. When's the last time the Bills beat the Eagles? Who was the quarterback of the Eagles the last time they lost to Buffalo?
Did they win that season finale game that you worked and I didn't?
No.
Marv?
In Philly?
Yeah.
No.
No? Okay.
But it's, I think, more recent than that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't.
Ron Mexico.
I don't have it. Ron Mexico. Okay.
Vic.
Sure.
The game in Buffalo won.
They took the ball away like crazy in that game.
When there's that Merrill Reese clip. Philadelphia radio, where the Eagles have like 4th and inches and somebody jumps, or the Bills have 4th and inches and somebody jumps offside, and the guy just completely loses it.
Yes, I remember that.
That's the only Bills win over the Eagles, 2011, since the 90s. They've lost 5 out of 6 against the Eagles since then, including that crazy, awesome overtime game 2 years ago. Well, all right. Fun to jump around there. I mean, I was playing a little bit of a role with Kansas City and the schedule yesterday.
Yep.
I sort of just got into it. They do have the Ravens, the Eagles, the Lions, like early home.
It's a rough first 4 or 6 weeks. Yeah, it is. And the Bills have the opposite, really, of that. I mean, they've got Baltimore week 1, but then it's pretty soft until maybe Atlanta.
If that's even.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think something. That'll be a harder game than maybe fans are riding around in their cars right now thinking. But still, it's, you know, Jets, Miami, New Orleans, New England after that Baltimore game. So the opportunity for a really nice start is there. And yeah, the Atlanta game is, you know, you're not, it's not, you know, the 49ers in their prime or anything. It's a, I think, an up-and-coming NFC team that you might overlook. But still, then it's Carolina even after that.
Then Kansas City.
Then Kansas City. So if the Chiefs are, you know, a little wobbly, you know, because of the difficulty of the schedule, the Bills hopefully have the opposite going on. Because the quick start is out there for them. And if they can get out and get a lead on them and then beat them, oh, man.
But how much is it to say that Kansas City will lose 6 or 7 games? Like, how much is that to say? What's their over-under going to be? 11.5?
I would
guess that's about what the Bills is.
Yeah.
I mean, 11 wins is 6 losses. Last year they lost 2, and the last game didn't even matter to them. So, I mean, that's pretty extreme. How much is it to say that? Like, the thing with the Chiefs has been, you know, we had, like, Joe Ostrowski and Sam and Nick Costos and these guys who bring up the, Ross, maybe more than anybody else, Ross Tucker. It's like, do you really want to bet against them? Do you really want to pick against Kansas City? Watch, you know, be careful. Think, listen mm-hmm. to yourself. Do you really want to do this? And that 2 years ago when they won here and they won in Baltimore, they were underdogs in those games and won anyway. And it just became like, I don't want to think about this anymore. Just play them. Just take them. And last year, if you did that, you did great because they won. I mean, they hardly ever covered, probably, but they won every
right.
week.
Right.
So are we still there with Kansas City? Like, I can totally see them having a tough time this year, but maybe I'm just sort of hoping. I mean, those are tough opponents. And are they just going to win forever? Is Kansas City just going to rule? Are they New England? Maybe they are. Are they just going to be much the best team in their division for a decade like New England was?
The last 2 years, really. I think it's right to connect. Or is it even 3? Last year was their 3rd year since Tyreek Hill left. They won the Super Bowl the first 2 times, right?
Yes.
So it's 3 years where they've not really had, you know, a hot shot guy. Oh, look, Kelsey exists, but that's even deteriorating. But still, his numbers last year were, when you mentioned him earlier this week, already to me, surprisingly good, considering what he looked like by the end of the season, at least to me. I feel like, sure, I mean, I think you're hoping, which is fine to do. I like wondering, are they just going to win forever? When we were putting together our 8-team division winning parlay for the NFL season the other day, like, look out, Chargers, Broncos, somebody could get them. I like the price. I'm going to take one of them. I still haven't officially put that in, but I'm going to take one of those two that are like plus 500 or something to win the division, and I'm just going to take the chance on it. But I think the Chiefs are lined up to be better. I don't want to say better than ever because they've been so good, but I like them on paper more this year than I did at this time last year. Rice, the Worthy, I like the rookie running back. If they sort of get Kareem Hunt gets sort of backseated there, that might be smart for them. And the left tackle they drafted out of Ohio State being healthy already for training camp is a big deal. When they made that pick, I mean, there were people that would tell you that he would have been contending with the LSU kid that the Patriots took to be the top tackle if he were healthy. And so they got him at 32 or 31. They traded, right, at the end?
Yes, they in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia moved up, right. So whatever, they got him, and he might be, I mean, they've had a different guy. What is it? It's 5 years in a row or whatever it is.
6.
At left tackle. That might be their left tackle. He might be their Deion Dawkins. And that's a really nice piece to have.
Mahomes has had 6 different left tackles. Hurts has had 6 different offensive coordinators. Right? We had that one yesterday?
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, thanks for listening. 803-0550. You want to jump in? We will talk to John Harris, who's on the Texans broadcast today. Get to know Houston a little bit better. And Paul Hamilton will join us later on. We'll be right back. This is WGR.
I love what Rousseau is able to bring to the table. This is somebody who, when I was scouting him at Miami, I was just, you know, blown away by what he was able to do as a nose tackle, as a three technique, as a five technique. I mean, he was just able to do so many different things, and it feels as though the Bills give him that freedom to be able to do that week in and week out, and he's such a chess piece for their defensive line. Obviously, Matt Milano, when he is healthy, he is fantastic. Christian Benford has been excellent for them. It's that versatility of what Greg Rousseau brings to that defensive line that I love so much about what they can do and how flexible they can be every single week.
Trevor Sikkema, a guest earlier today on WGR. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Tampa Bay Trey. We're talking about the Bucs.
All right.
Check the box. Two segments in a row. Tampa Bay.
It's Tampa Bay Day.
It's Tampa Bay Trey. It's Tampa Bay Day. I want to get to the point a little bit about what he was talking about there in a minute. Here's Michael with us. Hi, Michael.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you for calling.
Guys, the other day, I don't know if it was you guys or somebody on the show was talking about Cole Bishop. I remember a few years back, Sal talking to Micah Hyde, saying that it took Hyde about 2 to 3 years to really understand McDermott's defense from the safety position. I don't know if Bishop played that style in college or that system in college, but I'm really worried about the back end. I just want to know what you guys think.
Well, there's a lot riding on him coming through, I think. I was thinking about this yesterday, and we did with Sal, I think, on yesterday's show, in fact, talk about Bishop and his importance, right? Having someone you can depend on the deep half of the field that the number two corner is playing, whoever that is, a rookie or Tre'Davious White, for a second time around. I think a lot is riding on Bishop. We had the luxury of sort of just having two guys back there that seemed, if not actually were, interchangeable and were very good even on their worst days, excellent on their best. Like, there was just such a security to have, okay, that's all taken care of, right? And you know, Hyde gets hurt, Poyer eventually ages out, and you're sort of shuffling the deck here, and Bishop is a second-round pick from last year. Like, they will want that. They should want that to hit. He should become, like, an above-average starter. And, you know, he didn't play a lot last year, and there were, you know, injuries early, but there's a lot riding on him. I can't tell you how to handicap it. I mean, I liked the player a lot coming out of college. His athletic profile, you know, read like, okay, I get why they're drafting this player. I frankly was kind of let down that he didn't break through more than he did last year. But he's a key guy, I think, moving into the 25 season.
Should it be a top 10 defense? Last 7 years. What do you want, points or yards? What's better? I think yards is better. Okay?
Okay.
From last year back, 17th, 9th, 6th, 1st, 14th, 3rd, 2nd. 26th in the drought-breaking year, 2017. Should it be a top 10 defense? Who's the most important guy? I think Milano maybe is the most important guy. But he's a linebacker, so maybe I shouldn't pick him. I mean, the second corner is big.
Yep.
Pass rush, I don't know. I think is what it is. I mean, Joey Bosa, they've added some names.
Hoyt, yeah.
But and those are two of the guys are going to be out for 6 games. Bosa might be two.
Yeah, who knows?
Like, yeah. I don't know. It doesn't – and the draft. But
– it should – I want to say the resources that they have poured into it this offseason – I think it would be tough to justify not being a top 10 defense.
Absolutely.
Not you know, not the best, not leading the league in sacks or something, but you should be above average, maybe even significantly above average if you are pouring your top 4 draft picks into it and your free agent signings and everything they did here, including Bosa. And the guys that are going to be suspended, like they really went to work on it. And it is not the first time they've done that. Maybe this was the most extreme using those top 4 picks, but two top picks used on defensive ends, another one used on a defensive end, a defensive tackle. Like they have devoted energy with big resources to the defense and the defensive line specifically, and they've done it again here, yeah, I think it kind of has to pay off. You better be good back there, or up there, all around there, just on that side of the ball.
You know, a lot of times, it doesn't have to be like this. I want to say it's just how I think. The conversations, the hypotheticals we dive into are based on the negative. They're based on what if this goes wrong, or what if, you know, because what really is it? I say this in my own defense toward that. I think this is how the teams would do it, because that's what I think should be the case.
You're trying to troubleshoot potential problems. Yeah.
Right. Like, what if this guy gets hurt? What if this happens? Are we prepared for it? You know, that kind of stuff. I just think this year, maybe this isn't different. Maybe it is. But McDermott and Bean, like, if the Bills have an off year, which they have not had here since this all started, if they have really, you know, right? Like, they've won a playoff game every one of these seasons. They've won the division 5 years in a row. It's been a little bit up and down, but mostly, like, they've just rolled for 5 years. I just wonder if McDermott or Bean can afford a down year. Like, what will that sound? What will this sound like if their defense isn't really good? Like, isn't the whole point with McDermott that they can have fluctuation on the roster, but, I mean, the results are great overall all these years, like I just ran through, that he's supposed to make that up. He's supposed to be able to, because that's why you have him.
Coach up the guy. Yeah, right.
So that's, I don't know. Like, if that doesn't happen, there are a lot of changes, and there's a rookie at corner. And the last time they did that, it went terribly with Elam. I mean, Benford happened. But, you know, like, it's not like it has to, it's not a lock or anything that Harrison is, you know, not a liability. I just wonder what we're going to do about it. Like, Bean too, especially, not that everybody would care about this, but his stuff after the draft.
Well, yeah.
In here was like very, almost weird. Like, what, how are you so easily rankled by this? He just got sick of hearing it, I guess. And, you know, last year they didn't really get open. It wasn't like people said, actually, no, the Bills have great receivers. No, it's that Allen made it work. And Cook and Brady, like, they made it work. Because nobody, including Coleman, nobody in that group really was that good. So the team was good. I just wonder how sort of primed fans might be when in terms of McDermott or Bean at this point. Because Allen is so well established as a star, and he's not going to get blamed, and he probably won't deserve to be.
I think it'll be really interesting to watch how it unfolds. And, like, I don't want to get too far down the road of, like, you know, a season that goes this way or that way. Overall, I think right now, way more fans are ready to come for McDermott almost all the time. Just because of, I mean, it's still that game from January of 21 that I'm not going to say, because when I saw it referenced on Twitter today, it made me mad. And I think I do that to people every day. I say those words and people riding their cars go, dude!
22.
And I did. Okay, sorry. Yeah, right. The 21 season. Thank
right,
you.
Right, sure.
All right.
Because I wanted you to spend more time on it.
Yeah, right.
Us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm involved.
That leaves, like, that is still, like, until he carries this team to a championship, that is going to be McDermott's defining moment for a lot of fans. And so that I think is established. But this year, I think while fans are certainly on the Bean bandwagon by and large, because they loved it when he called in and told the radio guys to shut up and stuff it and all this stuff, like, that works for fans to an extent. But then you have to have the results to back that up again. Like, you're bragging about your results from last year, and that's fine. You've got scoreboard. Okay. If the defensive picks don't work out, if Joey Bosa can't stay on the field, if they really miss the guys during the 6 weeks, or whatever, like, it just doesn't come together, and the defense is, like, just barely scraping by, I would think a lot of fans are going to remember Bean and how aggressive he was after the draft, and then turn it back on him. So I think, and it's the first time that I feel like that might be, fans are always going to be there with this pick or that pick, Elam, whatever, right? But by and large, I think Bean has had a much smoother ride than McDermott because McDermott's at the flashpoint of these games that end seasons. And Bean is in a press box, and his work is done, at a different time of the year. He's mostly watching those games happen, just like we are. I think if any of those defensive guys don't come through, sure, some fans who are predisposed to the McDermott opinion that he's hurting them more than helping them can still always stand there. But I think a lot of fans will think about Bean for the first time.
Here's Joe next. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
I wanted to add on to what you guys were saying. There really is no excuse. Barring the defense being totally wrecked by injuries like they were 2 years ago, there really is no excuse for, a total defensive collapse against the Chiefs in the playoffs. Because they you said, they put in so many resources, be it free agent signings or the draft this year. Like, there is no reason. And I'm part of the McDermott needs to go bandwagon. I felt this way since the 13-second game. But I've been thinking a lot about Bean lately because I just think that some of the draft misses he's had, like the big one is Ed Oliver, the cornerback.
Elam, yeah, I just mentioned it.
Yeah, Elam. And then I did just mention Ed Oliver. I think at the time that looked like a solid pick, but like with hindsight, Brian Burns went within the next five picks. That would be a great piece for us to have because I think like that star or a superstar edge rusher is really what would put this defense over the map, and it's what they've been trying. They've been trying to find one. I'll give them credit since they got here, but they haven't been able to do it. They had it for about 11 weeks with Von Miller, and they blew out his knee.
Yeah,
but that's the missing piece, in my opinion.
Thanks, Joe. Good points. Here's John next. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to call in. I heard you talking about the defense, and then I heard you talking about Bean, and that kind of got me on a thought here. I like Bean. I really do. I think he's a great, great GM. I think sometimes that he's so likable. And he speaks very well that sometimes some of his flaws get kind of pushed under the rug, I guess you would say. But you look at the defensive tackles, I don't understand why we took two this year and then we took one last year in the third round, I think it was.
Yep.
That doesn't, I don't understand that because, we have Oliver and you look at how we played against the Ravens in the playoffs. We kept Lamar in check. We kept Henry in check. So, To draft defensive tackles like that, I just kind of want to get your thoughts and see what you thought on that.
I think it was their reaction to seeing what Philadelphia did to Kansas City in the Super Bowl to some extent. And they've got Daquan Jones, who's aging out. He's still listed as a starter on the depth chart. We'll see what the summer brings. But they needed to supplement that position. I think the big one I'm wondering about, I like both of the guys this year that they picked, Sanders in the second round and Deion Walker in the fourth round. Dwayne Carter is the mystery to me. That's a third-round pick from last year, and it was going all right earlier in the year, and then it was a little like Coleman, injury, and then he just was a ghost. And I wonder about whether they've got too many bodies for him to ultimately make it out of camp. With the six-game suspensions to one of the tackles.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That probably eases that number crunch, but eventually that's going to be a problem, I think.
Thank you, John. 803-0550 if you want to be next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We'll talk to John Harris about the Texans coming up in 20 minutes. This is WGR. Hello again, John Harris, sideline reporter for the Houston Texans, will join us just after 4, all times Eastern. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. That's PM.
That's for my wife,
who mistook PM for AM when buying a plane ticket recently.
tough one.
That is a tough one.
Yeah.
She'll be back. She'll be back. Hope you're enjoying the fluminescence of today's show. I feel like so far so good on that front. Fluminescence. My new favorite quote word.
Lost to Chelsea yesterday in the Club World Cup. We're watching Paris Saint-Germain here with a 3-0 first half lead on Madrid.
Real Madrid.
And on the air, I think I said all I knew about this tournament is that like people are making fun of it and there's nobody there. And a listener heard us and heard me and corrected me. And the game we had on yesterday when we were talking was an example of this, and so is today's game in the same venue, I think. Is this also in the Meadowlands?
I think so.
I can't tell. It looks the same as yesterday. It's packed. What this listener said to me was like there were a lot of teams you've never heard of in the round of 32 to begin the thing, but as it's whittled down here and the more familiar big-time teams are playing one another, you're seeing big crowds, and that's the case. Yesterday, even though I'd never heard of Flumen, what was their name again? Flumonia? Fluminoid? Whatever, anyway. But this game is packed, and so is yesterday's. So
Flunes.
Yeah, that's not it.
No, that's a thing you can buy, I think. Chelsea awaits the winner.
Right, they won yesterday over that team that should go nameless.
If you... Why stop now? If you were to go to one soccer game in your life, anywhere in the world, what's the game? Like, what's the event? Who are the teams? What are we doing?
I think maybe because it happens every year where and of course there are rivalries like this in every soccer league on earth, but I feel like the El Clasico would be on my list. Although I don't, I'm not sure
they're about not going, let you back
I'm
in.
Not sure about going back to Spain.
They're
though.
Not going to let you
bad,
back in.
It's a bad answer by me right there.
Asterisk.
It's a bad.
I'd pick Barcelona versus Real Madrid as long as I can get in.
As long as I don't get arrested when I try to rent a car.
Right.
That's, yeah. Maybe if I just use public transportation, I'll be okay.
I always liked the idea of the smaller English Premier League venues.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, I don't know if this is actually that small, but it sounds like it should be small by its name. Craven Cottage. I think I'd pick a place like that. Like Craven Cottage.
Yeah.
Fulham, right? I'd pick a place like that. That place you're talking about, that... Barcelona is like 100,000 seats.
Yeah, it's a
no,
massive,
thank you.
It's a massive thing.
I'd like about 15.
Yeah,
I like a real game in a neighborhood at a neighborhood stadium like at Everton had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
with Goodison Park they just closed.
I like the sound of that.
I watched that last game. So did you, right? The last game at Everton, my team, my the Toffees,
right?
And my wife watched it with me, could not believe how the stadium was situated in the neighborhood, in Liverpool, right? In the neighborhood like it is. Like, there's just no, you would never drive there. You couldn't drive to the stadium.
Right.
You would have to figure out another way to get there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more like their lifestyle, but a place like that. I'm too late for that one, and maybe now their new stadium is going to be another huge monstrosity.
What you need is a team. Who are the Tractor Boys?
I don't know that one.
New to the Premier League this year. I can't remember the name of what the team is called, but that's the nickname.
Okay.
Ipswich Town.
Right. Thank you. Ed Sheeran's team, I think it may be. Anyway, you need,
how did I not know
you
that?
Need a team that is just gets back to the Premier League for the first time in a long time, and they're still probably playing in a bandbox. Like that's your ticket. Like,
and you'd go see Liverpool there,
sure,
or somebody like that.
I always love those games. It's one of the things I like about when they play the FA Cup games, which are all the different divisions within English soccer playing one another. It's just a tournament, so you get teams from the third or fourth level playing the top teams, and they're hosting. And I always love those games because it looks like they don't even know where to put the TV cameras. Like the stadiums are so old and antiquated. It just everything looks off from what you're used to watching, and I always love those games.
I know I watched one of those games this year, and I think it was Liverpool, and they lost at some team I could not name.
Right.
I think it was one of the big shots that lost at,
Ipswich Town.
Fluminos. FC. And they lost.
And I've got it here. The Fluminati is actually what they're called.
That's what I was wanted yesterday when I made the mistake at the end of the word. Fluminati. That's what I wanted yesterday. You got there. Good. All right.
Only took us 2 days.
Luminescence. Only took us 2 days. John Harris on the Texans after this. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.